Mini episode 1004 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 1004 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here, welcoming back a great guest to the program. We had this gentleman on, I believe, 2 years ago at the All-Star break in the same spot here, talking about the midpoint of the baseball season, the landscape of baseball. Much has changed since that point in time, but that was the year, and I think we're going to be talking about this a little bit, that some of the current powers in baseball, I think we saw a little bit of a changing of the guard somewhat between 2015 and 2016 as far as some of the teams the front half of this decade and the contenders that we have seen since. So it's going to be very interesting to get into this with him. Of course, a very distinguished broadcast guest, national radio and television, as well as podcasting. This gentleman does it all, old media, new media, does some writing as well. Seth Everett, a pleasure to have you back on the show, sir. Thank you so much for coming back on.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. What a kind introduction.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to have you on. And in terms of the landscape of this, I was thinking about this a little bit the other day where it really just kind of hit me that you look at the front half of this decade and you have the Giants who it seems like forever since they've been super relevant, but they have three world titles this decade alone. I think it was St. Louis firing Mike Matheny that really sort of drove it home to me because they were another one of the teams of the front half of the decade. And you had the Texas Rangers at the beginning of the decade, and Boston was up and then they were down and now they're up again. So we've been a little bit of a change there. Just Kansas City and the Mets in the World Series in 2015, that seems like it was the mid-80s the last time they were in there, but it was really only 3 years ago those teams were in the World Series. And the next fall, the Cubs and my Cleveland Indians in there. Then you've got Houston and the Dodgers last year. The Yankees being reestablished, Boston being reestablished. The last 3 years or so, it's been a really interesting time, has it not, for sort of resetting the powers in Major League Baseball?
Well, I mean, nothing that you said was incorrect. You're all factually accurate, but I think that the last 3 years have been a very big turn for baseball. There has been a change in the focus. The sabermetrics and all the analytics have changed the way the game has gone. And just to give you a couple of statistics to back it up, this is the first season in baseball history that there are actually more strikeouts than hits. If you project the numbers, and I stole this from he gave it to me, but Jason Stark, the great writer for The Athletic, gave me this statistic. He said that if you take this season and project the way out, you know, the rest of this season out, baseball will have 10,000 less balls hit in play than 2009. That's a dramatic number. The average amount of time between balls hit in play is now at 3 minutes and 49 seconds. I'd ask your listeners, how many times do you check Twitter or Facebook during 3 minutes and 49 seconds? The sport has gone through a metamorphosis, and I think it's bordering on a crisis. And a lot of people think maybe I'm a bit alarmist when it comes to this, but, you know, I was at the All-Star game, and every player I talked to had something to say about too many strikeouts. As far as the changing of the teams, I just think there's a big disparity. Baseball has, right now, five, possibly six teams on pace to lose 100 games. And while the American League seems to have been all settled, and we haven't even hit August yet, the National League does have a couple of more competitive teams. So I just think that baseball is facing a potential crisis, and I think the powers that be, the commissioner on down, have to figure something out, because I don't know how this sport targets young viewers when they have the numbers that they're doing. And I'll give you one other statistic just to show that this is not just me pontificating. Baseball has had a 6.5% drop in attendance, and that is a 15-year low. I can remember times when I worked for the league office, we would do whole shows they're not close to an attendance record these days.
Well, yeah, and a lot of this has been a long time in coming. One of the aspects, underlying aspects to what you're talking about there as far as the strikeouts goes, I remember, and I was kind of surprised about this at the time, that when baseball started drug testing for amphetamines, our FDH director of research, Nate Noy, said to me, you know, this is going to have a dramatic effect, because he had been on, I think, ADHD medication, which is essentially tantamount to amphetamines. And I said, this was like 06, 07. And I said to him, well, aren't they just going to drink more coffee, drink more Red Bull? I was kind of naive. And he said, no. He said, it's going to have an effect. You get into the dog days of August. And ever since then, Seth, we've been tracking it. And I've been proud to say with FDH that we've been ahead of the curve on calling it because of his observation to me. So that's when the spike, I think, really sort of became pronounced at that point in time. You get into specialization with the relief pitchers. There's been talk about should they cap that in the late innings. The fact that the starting pitchers now a lot of times only have to face batters maybe two times around. You see a lot of that in the playoffs as well. So all these things with the hard-throwing guys that are constantly coming at you, the fresh arms, there's a lot of causes behind this, Seth, and probably no easy answer for what to do about it.
No, you know, it's funny. I told a story. I was at the U.S. Open golf tournament, and it was raining during one of the rounds, and a bunch of the writers and I were sitting in the media lounge just kind of waiting for the rain to subside, and we were debating if you could inherit a commissioner's job. Now, take the money out of it, because it's not equal money, but if you could inherit a commissioner's job, but you inherit all of that sports problem, who would you rather be, Roger Goodell or Rob Manfred? And I think, hands down, you could choose Roger Goodell. Because, you know, outside of the concussion issue, and I don't have a suggestion for concussions, but you look at a lot of the social issues with football and the oversaturation with football, a lot of that's treatable. A lot of that, if they had better leadership, you could argue, would be fixed by now. But in baseball, the problems that they're facing are things that are being taught. You know, that I don't look at it as the amphetamines. The amphetamines, you know, I remember working for the league office during the time when amphetamines were banned. And the only thing I thought was the schedule was too hard. I thought that there should be a rule that said that if you're traveling more than 1,000 miles, you should have to play a day game beforehand. That you shouldn't play night games and travel. I remember in 2014 when I was traveling with the New York Mets, they played a net game in Atlanta, and the next night had to be in Anaheim.
Right.
And I just thought, that's absurd. That's where I thought the amphetamine issue was addressed. I think that the thing now is they've introduced this thing called the shift.
Right.
Where, you know, and what has happened as a result is there's this new statistic. This is a sabermetric statistic that they introduced something called launch angle. And I've had scouts tell me that these teams are teaching that launch angle is the number one priority of hitters when they step into the batter's box, and that contact is number two. And when I heard that from scouts, and they said that they're teaching that at the major and minor league level, I worry about baseball's future.
Well, I can understand that, too, if it's being taken that far, because, yeah, we've heard a lot about launch angle in the last year or so, but I had not heard that it had gone that far. And, yeah, if it's affecting fundamental teachings in that way, it's pretty easy to see the cause and effect that you're pointing towards. What I'd like to ask you additionally here, because I think this may be a symptom as far as some of baseball's problems, maybe somewhat related to what we're talking about here. You look at the fact that with all the sabermetrics that are out there, the advanced analytics, to me, from my perspective, I get the sense that it's harder to build a better mousetrap the way that Billy Beane did once upon a time, just because there is so much information that is available now. You look at what Tampa Bay's doing. I mean, they're trying to build a better mousetrap with this whole relief pitchers as starting pitchers kind of thing. But are we not getting to a world where it's going to favor the dominant teams and the dominant financial teams, I would say, like the Yankees, the Dodgers? There's no salary cap for the front office. The Dodgers go and poach somebody like Friedman to run their baseball operations. If everybody has access to the same set of knowledge, don't we default back to a world where the deeper pockets are going to do better, and to where the middle and lower markets may get marginalized as they were, say, 15 years ago?
Well, there's two schools of thought on that. I mean, because if you look at payroll, there has been really competitive payrolls for the last three or four seasons.
Right.
I think what's changed is, you know, if you look at the luxury tax, only one team was over the luxury tax. And, you know, I don't care what people call it, that's a salary cap, because they're now charging 50% on the dollar. And so no team really wants to pay luxury tax anymore. And the only team that did last year were the Dodgers, and they made the World Series. The Yankees are so far under the luxury tax that if they acquire a player such as Manny Machado, they still would not pay luxury tax. And that's a compliment to their general manager, because, you know, this used to be the has and the have-nots. And this idea that, you know, if you're a baseball team that can stay under a luxury tax and still compete, that's a testament to your front office. I think the problem that I've seen is teams that are hesitant to embrace the analytics, and understand that I'm not in favor of this. I don't think, you know, all these analytics are making for a more entertaining sport. But if you're the teams, your job is not to entertain the public. Your job is to win games.
Right.
And, you know, what I find when I go on radio stations across the country, if I'm on in a market where a team is in first place, they don't talk about strikeouts. When I'm on with a market where the teams are struggling, I immediately am drawn to strikeouts. And it becomes something that is a theme all the time. And it's a scary thing, because I think it's a direct correlation to the drop in attendance. I haven't seen this year's television ratings yet. Last year, baseball set a home run record. They're not close to a home run record this year, and yet the strikeouts still exist.
Yeah, exactly. They had been going hand in hand for a while there, and as you said, there's been a little bit of a divergence this year with home runs and with strikeouts. But this is all related to, as far as the health of baseball. I go back to, I believe it was in our conversation 2 years ago, and there's a word that I use from time to time, and there's a commonality here that my good friend from Sportsology, Russ Cohen, doesn't like it when I talk about it in terms of hockey as well, and that word being silo. And I remember you pointed out to me 2 years ago, well, baseball's having record local ratings, and absolutely that has been the case. At least it was in 2016, and I think the local ratings are still going strong. But you look at something like the news that came out today, where Rob Manfred was asked about the marketing of Mike Trout. And to me, this all sort of goes hand in hand, because I use my dad as the example of the casual at best sports fan who knew who Barry Bonds was, Ken Griffey Jr., Randy Johnson, etc. The guys of this generation, again, you get to the outside, you get to the casual sports fans, they're not nearly as well known. So Manfred was kind of throwing the grenade, if you will, back in the lap of Mike Trout and saying, well, he's got to want it a little bit more if he's going to be a household name. But I would ask you, if it's not incumbent on the commissioner of the sport to, in the offseason, maybe have a little summit here, Trout and Kershaw and Harper and a couple of these guys, maybe you throw my guy Frankie Lindor in the mix and sit down with them and say, guys, we got to get you better known nationally. Is there something we can do to help with the marketing? Because to me, this is almost a Manhattan Project type level. If you want to break the sport out of where it's at now, is to get these guys back into the mainstream. What do you think about that, Seth?
Well, it's a loaded question, and you know, I have a couple of things. You're not wrong, but I don't think it's really the responsibility of the commissioner to worry about the marketing. I want him to focus on the health of the sport. I want him to focus on the quality of the game. I hold sports to a high standard. What the NBA has been able to do is a marketing marvel. They have created almost like a reality show cast of characters. And between the social media and the radio shows and the television contests, the players know who LeBron James is friends with.
Right.
And everyone knows their political stats. And what I don't understand is, I've challenged radio stations to play a soundbite of Mike Trout and give a T-shirt to the first person who can identify his voice. But I guarantee you, every one of those stations could play Ken Griffey Jr. or Barry Bonds or Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, Alex Rodriguez, Derek Jeter. All of those guys. There doesn't seem to be an apples-to-apples comparison. I don't even think some of the more popular guys, the Aaron Judge-type players, I don't think a lot of people know what he sounds like. There's a huge disconnect. But what happens then is the focus then goes back to the actual games. See, I don't see anybody on social media complaining about a boring third quarter between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Portland Trailblazers.
Mm-hmm.
That never gets talked about. But when a game, I was at a Yankees-Astros game back in, I want to say, beginning of May. And that's two of the top five teams in the sport. I mean, that's the equivalent of Cleveland and Golden State, right?
Right.
And if you have that, the Yankees had committed five defensive errors and struck out 17 times, but it also hit four home runs and won. That's not a – I wouldn't put that in a time capsule. Like, I don't want to see that game, and I wouldn't want to see those highlights. I got into a Twitter spat with the official MLB account because there was a time when one evening, I think this was in June, 10 of highlights of home runs. I'm like, didn't a shortstop do something good? Like, isn't there something else? And it was a joke. You know, and I did it privately. I did it over DM because those guys are friends of mine. But I just think that from the marketing standpoint, I don't think they get it. And I don't want to turn water into wine. I want the game to be back where it was. I'm just asking for 10 years ago. I'm not the old man saying, you know, bring back the 1960s or bring back even the 1980s. I'm just saying bring back the 2000s because that was a better sport.
I would agree with that. And I would say, too, Yankees and Astros, I say this sadly as a lifelong Cavs fan, that's Cleveland Golden State was on the level of that as of a couple of weeks ago. That rivalry is now defunct, I hate to say. But, yeah, I hear you about the Astros and the Yankees. And, again, that's as good as it gets, or it should be as good as it gets, when those two teams meet one another. And, again, the quality of the game is very important as far as how that goes. So you obviously seem to share the take that's out there from a lot of observers of the sport, and I'm not sure that I disagree with it myself, that as far as this whole thing about reaching millennials, which for as much as we joke about this, is very important, because if you're losing that generation, what does the future of the sport bode? That the improvement of the game, and that, again, the attention span of millennials, again, for as much as we hear about that a lot of times in a humorous kind of way, there is a lot to it. A couple of my good friends are millennials, and they themselves admit it. So basically, so you must seem to regard that as basically as very, very, very vital to this whole project here, that if you get a more watchable sport, you think a lot of this other stuff will take care of itself?
Well, I would think that at least you put yourself in a position to have a marketing plan.
Okay.
I think the priorities for the commissioner are, first of all, he needs to eliminate that shift. That defensive shift is costing hits. And I think if the emphasis was more on putting the ball into play, I think then all of a sudden there'd be less emphasis on the home run. I mean, look at the All-Star game yesterday. There were a record 10 home runs, and the only other run scored was a sac fly. I mean, there's no entertainment there. And it's one of those things where if the focus is on launch angle and the focus is on driving the ball and all the teams are just trying to find these power pitchers that throw 98, 99, 100 miles an hour, all you're doing is matching power to power, and there's no finesse. And I thought baseball was a big part of that. I can remember, you know, growing up being a fan of shortstops and, you know, seeing some of the greats and understanding what good defense could mean and, you know, good defensive clubs that always seemed to be winning. And I loved a pitcher that didn't strike anybody out, but then induced ground balls. That was just, to me, what appealed to the game. You know, I'll quote Jason Stark again just because he said this to me on a podcast. You know, baseball is a thinking man's game, but there needs to be more action to supplement the thing.
That's a great point. There does have to be a balance on that. But along those lines, let me ask you about this, because that was something you kind of mentioned in passing here. And while I understand the sentiment behind it, it seems like the means to address it would be radical, and that being what you threw out there as far as the shift goes and not having a shift in the game anymore. You hear talk about, well, maybe if you draw additional lines on the field. I mean, how exactly would you police this, Seth?
It's easy. You don't have to draw a line. I understand the aesthetics of the whole thing, but have an imaginary line from the point of home plate to straightaway center field. Before the pitch is thrown, the first baseman, second baseman, right fielder can't cross it. The left fielder, the shortstop, and the third baseman can't cross it. The only players that can play on either side of the line are the center fielder, pitcher, and catcher. You can institute that right now, and you take 230 hitters and turn them into 255 hitters. That's your missing hit.
Okay.
And that would just be step one. Then once you know that these power hitters could, you know, hit line drives up the middle and continue to drive in runs, now you see less of an emphasis in hitting the ball in the gap. You still have power hitters that are trying to hit for power, but they would take base hits where they can get them. And I don't think these hitters are impressed with having 30 home runs and hitting 210. To me, that's an obnoxious hit.
Well, the fact that you were able to outline it in a way that didn't involve anything as unsightly as an additional line on the field, yeah, I find myself pretty sympathetic to what you're saying because, yeah, I think that would be an improvement in the game. I think it would make it more watchable. So, yeah, the way you've laid it out, I agree with it. As we're bringing this around full circle here, what I'd like to get your thoughts on is some rankings that we have. I'll give you just sort of the top half of baseball here. But with FDH, we've been doing this for a while for fantasy, doing an ultimate quantitative baseline. We've expanded it now to looking at the ball clubs overall. So this is a cumulative statistic from which we're deriving a ranking. This is OBP, OPS, FIP, ERA+, Pythagorean expectation for wins, SRS, run differential, and then two more. Our power rankings of the moment, and a metric that is one-half power rankings, one-half strength of schedule. So I'm going to run this by you and see if there's anything that surprises you out of the top 15 teams in baseball. There's a tier at the top three, probably not going to shock you. Houston 1, Boston 2, Yankees 3. There's another tier below that. This is where we get the separation in terms of the raw numbers. Dodgers and the Cubs. I don't know that anybody necessarily thinks of them as standing astride the National League the way they have the last 2 years, but they comprise the second tier of this all by themselves, 4 and 5. 6 through, I'll give you 15. You got the Indians, my tribe, at the top of that tier. Tampa Bay, 7. Oakland, 8. Atlanta, 9. Seattle, 10. Milwaukee, 11. Angels, 12. Arizona 13, Philadelphia 14, Colorado 15. So anything out of that that really kind of shocks you one way or another?
Not really. I mean, I still think Washington can come back and win the East. I think there's, 2.5 months left. Colorado's been a team I've been very high on, but they're kind of falling back in their division. And as far as the Cubs are concerned, they've played well recently, but I think their division is far from over, and I give Milwaukee a real good chance to catch them.
I would agree with that, definitely. And, yeah, Washington, actually, it's funny you mention them. They're actually 16 in our rankings, and St. Louis 17. It'll be interesting to see what St. Louis can do under new management. I saw a headline today as far as the thought having been thrown out there about Yadier Molina possibly handling a dual role akin to, ironically, Tony La Russa all those years ago. I don't really see it in the modern game. Do you see something like that?
Well, Yadier Molina is a guy, I think he's a Hall of Famer, but, I think his greater value is as a catcher. Everything he does offensively to me is just gravy. Yadier Molina is a guy, I think he's a borderline Hall of Famer, and he's had a brilliant career, and he's able to last this long, despite the ups and downs going on in St. Louis.
Yeah, he has. He's really had a very amazing career there, and his ability to handle pitchers, and he's been a big part of the glue that has helped keep them running strong for so long. And again, it's part of the reason that it's shocking to see something like a managerial firing in St. Louis, because again, they've been sort of the gold standard for stability in baseball for so long. So, anything as far as any kind of prediction or anything like that for the second half of the season that you think might surprise people? Something out there that might be something we're not expecting right now?
For the second half, I just think the American League playoff teams are already known.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Seattle will get one of the wild cards. The loser of the Yankees and Red Sox will get a wild card. My prediction has been the Red Sox winning the division. I think that'll happen. Cleveland's going to walk away with that division. There's nobody even remotely contending. In the National League, the Dodgers are probably going to win the West. Again, the Cubs and Milwaukee will go down to the wire. And I'm curious to see what Atlanta and Philadelphia do at the deadline, just because Washington's this great enigma. There's so much talent on the roster, and there's, some guys with impending free agency. I would love to see that 7-game lead get to like 4 by the, beginning of August, and then you'd have a real dogfight in your hands.
Absolutely. That will be something to watch. Again, a wonderful discussion with you once again, Seth. Thank you so much for being on. I'd love to have you back on subsequently to catch up on the doings in baseball. Appreciate your time today, sir.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on, Seth. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 1004.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.